SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Bally's Las Vegas, a very good Thursday, race fans. Excuse me. Wow. I knew my throat was a little scratchy. I didn't know it was this scratchy until I heard it in the headphones. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, SteveBick.com. Every time we come here, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's dry in the room, and I'm going to start calling it something. Vegas throat. There we go. The Thursday that is upon us, an absolute linchpin to a phenomenal weekend. Whether you're excited about following NHC, you got friends, relatives, cohorts, partners competing here, and the contestants are more and more visible around the hotel and around Vegas. I had to go get a cartridge of printer ink, and who do I run into? Lorne Weiss and one of the champions, Ray Arsenault. And Ray says, this is where I always come for my ink. It was pretty funny. There's all kinds of habits and practices that are part of this thing. So it was great to see the first Canadian invaders. And, you know, it just occurs to me about the border. I hadn't even thought about that. Right? August 9th, they opened the border from Canada. So very fortunate for the considerable number of Canadian players and champions, right? The big part of it. And then the ballroom complete. We'll probably get a visual out as the morning and the afternoon unfolds. It is the first chance, or last chance, next chance. The name has changed, of course, because it isn't the first chance. There's already been a number of qualifiers, of course, for 22. So we're in good shape here. We'll get an update from Keith Shamblin in a little bit. And we'll also, of course, at the same time, get excited about Saturday at Saratoga. And, you know, having been at Pacific Classic Day, and then following up the anticipation toward the Midsummer Classic, really a lot to look forward to. And when you look through this card, this bulky card, obviously, 13 race card, with all the grade ones and with any number of stars, I know that everybody is eager to deride field size, but when you look at races like the Travers, as we talked yesterday during the draw, if essential quality doesn't fire, if essential quality is not ready to perform, well, then there's any number of this group of seven beyond him, the six that face him. Same can be said, of course, and I don't think it will be. Let's just say Gamine. Gamine seems to have everything lined up for her. It's hard to. It's hard to envision, just because there's no other speed in the ballerina. It's so odd when that happens, when you get the top level sprint, and the majority of the field are horses that stalk or come from off. So Gamine drew the rail, though, and not that that's a huge hindrance. It didn't stop her in her previous inside draws, including the Las Flores in April, or going back to last year, the Acorn Romp. So, Johnny and Gamine from the rail in the ballerina, and when it came to the Alan Jerkins, well, it's the Jerkins that is the race that has got the most intrigue, because here you do have all the pace you could want, and life is good drawing outside, drawing the six hole, and Jackie's Warrior drawing the two, drain the clock, the one. And we can't forget Following C. Now, even though Following C is a turn back in this spot from the Haskell try, it does figure that he'll be at least prominent. And you know, Johnny getting back aboard. Johnny did ride him at Santa Anita in his debut. And Johnny's tendency is just to go forward. So I suppose Following C will he's not as quick as Jackie's Warrior or Life is Good. So he probably watches and is first to go and drain the clock drawing inside. He's also, he's quick. As we saw in the Amsterdam, he's just not as fast as Jackie's Warrior. So in terms of chess match and jockey decisions, this is the one that could be the most fascinating. Anxious to start to hearing opinions as the days lead in to Saturday. The Personal Ensign drew a nice field, and the focus will be on Latruska and Swiss Skydiver. However, Dunbar Road, who has just not looked as distinct, just is not really going back to the fall last year, just has not really had the spark. She draws the rail. Baffert sends Coolmore's as time goes by, who is certainly nice. And she's got speed. So speed and counts for a lot. But Latruska and Swiss Skydiver, Harvey's Little Goyle, comes back to the dirt, makes for a fun talking point. Pletcher adds Graceful Princess on the outside. It's top to bottom, it's strong. Miss Marissa, Jimmy Ryerson, the Del Cap winner, also speed interested. This has got pace. This has got pace, and one of the questions here is, how Latruska deals with what should be company from her inside and from out. And also, there's the circumstance that finds Errat Ortiz back on Latruska and Jose on Swiss Skydiver. a flipping flopping of the Ortizes on the two principles. It's kind of interesting. It's a fun race, and I'm very anxious actually when Keith gets down here in a little bit. I'm anxious to hear from him what they're doing about the stakes. It's fun to have stakes as part of the contest, and you might have seen, of course, fairly early in the afternoon, I think, around 3 o'clock, they released the Friday mandatories. Monmouth, two from Saratoga, Ellis, two from Del Mar, two from Woodbine. Woodbine with a Twilight card tomorrow. So, lots to talk about on all of this front. There's the other stakes cards around the country, including the Pat O'Brien, Del Mar, which really came up deep. Nice full field for the Pat O'Brien. Curious if that'll make its way into the Saturday mandatories. Speaking of state cards, we're going to talk in this hour to Eric Zimny, because it kind of snuck up on us, but the Charlestown Classic tomorrow, and not just the Classic. It is a very nice top to bottom stakes day at an evening. They start at 5 at Charlestown. The Classic 10-18 post for the Charlestown Classic tomorrow night. Field of 10, and that includes not just the defending winner with Sleepy Eyes Todd, but it also includes some people coming back to Charlestown that have had success, including, as mentioned yesterday, I think, or maybe it was Tuesday, David Fox, Noble Drama for Mr. Queen, shows up, and actually coming in off of a bullet. It's a really interesting mix and match field, as this race frequently, this Charlestown Classic, it's always interesting because it, you know, 3-turn, mile and an eighth, and you don't necessarily know. There's some horses that have shown up that you just don't know how they're going to take to that, you know, that 7/8 to the oval. So, a couple of very familiar names: Warrior's Charge, Warrior's Charge, who is like a knight on a chessboard, goes everywhere. Noble Drama is mentioned. Rushy. Michael McCarthy coming out of the San Diego Handicap. Very interesting play that McCarthy and Michael certainly understands what, you know, what kind of horse might take to this. Uriah St. Louis with Informative coming out of the Suburban, but of course had won the Salvador Mile ahead of it. Safi Joseph brings New York Traffic here. In fact, Safi Joseph's invaded Charlestown considerably. He's got horses in a number of the stakes. Sleepy Eyes Todd is mentioned. How about Art Collector coming off of that restricted Aladar win for Bill Mott and Bruce Lunsford? Val Brinkerhoff comes in from California with the rather turfy Restrained Vengeance, the 6-year-old gelding that's made over $750,000. Edwin Maldonado makes a trip to Charlestown. And then Jose Corrales comes over from Maryland with Air Token. The horse I haven't mentioned is the horse to me that's very, very intriguing. Ian Wilkes brings Bourbon Calling and Brian Hernandez Jr. And when you hit the PPs for this, for the Charlestown card, be sure to note that Bourbon Calling won last year's Russell Road. He's 15-1. And there's horses that are coming to this oval that you do not know if they're going to like it. It is a surface that is not for everyone. And Bourbon Calling, it, the best race of his career, was last year's Russell Road. So I 15 to 1, I'm interested. There's also the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks. The Classic's a Grade 2. And big, nice, bulky field here. Full field of 10 with an AE. And it includes the likes of Caramel Swirl, Bill Mott, and Jane Lyon. Or not Jane Lyon. Godolphin. Godolphin. That's a Godolphin. I did see a Summer Wind. Was it on this card? I saw there was a Summer Wind. One of Jane Lyon's bred runners somewhere. I looked at so many stakes since last evening. You know, this Charlestown Oaks, very notable. You go through this field, actually, and there's a ton of stakes, I mean, not just already stakes horses with stakes credentials, but the pedigrees. How about Pauline's Pearl, Steve Asmussen, and Barbara Banky, Stone Street, as mentioned yesterday. This is the Tappet out of Hot Dixie Chick, right? Third in the Iowa Oaks, won the Fantasy this winter. Brendan Walsh has got Moon Swag, also out of a regional oak, the Indiana Oaks, which he just got beat by Soothsay. This is Malibu Moon out of Yara. Inject shows up in here for Brad Cox. Third in the victory ride. Should be, she's 9-2 with Florent Giroux. Frosted out of Appealing Sophie. I mean, it is just one fancy pedigree after another. At Chucktown in the Oaks. Then there's everything else. $150,000 Russell Road, the Hilton, the Pink Ribbon, the West Virginia Stakes that they run, the Hawkins and the Levitt and so forth, and the Bishop. So a really, really nice card at Charlestown, as it always is. Eric does a tremendous job. So we'll talk to him in the next 45 minutes or so. And before I talk about what went on yesterday, and actually over the last couple of days, I mentioned that Pat O'Brien, Ginobili, Howbeit, Surfing Star, Mimosa, 8 rings off the improved effort in the Crosby, Classier as well for Baffert, Brickyard Ride for Craig Lewis, Flagstaff, as Sadler mentioned, CZ Rocket, as Peter Miller mentioned, and California Street for Patty Gallagher. And there is, speaking of Charlestown, I thought this was kind of a nice harmony, because Dance to Bristol's Medaglia d'Oro colt that fetched $750,000 at Keeneland last year for SF and Starlight and Matticat and that group. Baffert debuts Rockefeller in the 8th race at Del Mar Saturday. Notable. There's also the 2 Florida Sire Series stakes to look forward to at Gulfstream, and because it's encouraging about the future of Fairmont/FanDuel Park, the St. Louis Derby makes its return. $250,000. It's real money. Yeah. Brad Cox, who literally has got a horse in every stake in the country, it seems. It's unbelievable. Gagetown, 9-5 in here. Irish Unity, who seems a little emergent coming out of regional competition. Pioneer of the Nile out of the wonderful Just Whistle Dixie for Clear Sky, Clear View. And Flash of Mischief, Broberg, out of the Amsterdam. Hozier, you know, Rudy Brissett's been handling, and he's just a nice 3-year-old, it seems. But some of those aspirations for him really did not come to pass. You've got Scott Becker. With his member, you know, Scott from what, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, he talked about Charles Ritter and, you know, taking over the Stirrits operation WW Crazy, Mr. Fipke, with Kelly Ackerman, the Caddy Morning Strike, who's been campaigning and is actually on a three-race win streak at Fairmont. And local or Illinois participant as well, John Wainwright, Two Worlds, a Tappeture colt, will be a long shot. So the St. Louis Derby, kind of cool that it comes back. And, you know, you offer that kind of money, you'll draw some attention as they kind of rebuild and morph what will be a very different Fairmont. At some point, it continues to, you know, listen, without Indiana, without Arlington, I don't know what, you know, there's just no way to know yet what, you know, what it's going to look like in Illinois. As it happens, speaking of Arlington, they're running the Washington Futurity, the Arlington-Washington Futurity in Lassie as well. And I don't know. Are those going to become the Arlington-Washington Hawthorne Lassie? And it's hard to know. It's just hard to... he's going to have to wait that out and see how how things turn out. All right, that sets the stage for what lies ahead, particularly for Saturday. Let's talk about yesterday and what is just a maddening circumstance around not just Saratoga. I can't even call it regional. It's everywhere. The stewarding frustrations just don't abate. And it's at a point where you just don't know what to expect from any incident going up to the steward stand. It used to be able to watch something and say, I'm coming down here. Now and then you're left up. Or you watch it and say, that's nothing. And it's a DQ. There's no making sense of what goes on when it goes upstairs to be adjudicated. The non-action involving that eighth race yesterday at Saratoga is just it's just bizarre. And whether it's hurting circumstances, which we've talked about for years on end, whether it's that or this wasn't so much hurting as Winterpool getting out and Ricardo Santana having trouble. He tried, I saw him. He goes to the left hand to try to get Winterpool, back in line. But it's too late at that point. I mean, you've come out four paths. And you can... you can have the discussion about, we've discussed this, the taking down the best horse benefits nobody, and if it was, find the giant. I say that. I mean, there's occasions where you see it. We had the one actually, and this was a non-call. What was it? Who can even remember all the ones that we see? But this is dangerous. It seems like there's no control. It seems like there's no effort being made to manage and organize and have a coherent approach to working with the jocks. We don't hear about anybody being brought in. We do if they use the stick four times instead of three. That's what, and maybe that, you know, that not the case necessarily in New York, but, you know, maybe there's, you know, stewards worrying about things that, you know, that obscure or cloud judgment. I don't know. I'll tell you this, though. It creates an atmosphere that, when it pervades, and players, you know, even when you see players, say, I benefited from the non-call, but I fully expected to be DQ'd. That's the ultimate, right? That's the ultimate endorsement. Somebody that actually made money and said, I should have been taken down. I don't know. It's, we talk about it over and over again and you know, the various incidents. It's, it's an ongoing issue, let's put it that way. And it's come from everywhere. We've had it at virtually every venue, right? We had Arlington a couple of weeks ago. Del Mar's had it. There's certainly ones that, you know, you don't see in you know, B circuit and C circuit tracks that aren't under the same scrutiny. And who was it the other day that again suggested what Seth Merrow, and by the way, how about America's favorite TV pundit, that push yesterday of Unicorn Sally was pristine. Brilliant. And Seth made the case in terms of the move from, you know, back into claiming ranks from state bread allowance. That was Seth's angle. And Luis Saez, who, forget it. I mean, Luis Saez is, in fact, I saw Andy, I don't know if you saw Andy's tweet, but I think he really made a great point about Saez and where things stand with what, eight cards left? What do we got today? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 9 cards left. And Andy said, when you see Saez, you know, knocking home horses, you know, the opening double, you know, two horses that were, you know, they weren't impossible, but they didn't exactly look likely, let's put it that way. And he boots those home, and just is ringing up the wins. Terrific ride by Saez. And you had, of course, now you did have, you know, you had an incident in that race too, right? There were three. Well, yeah, because there was also the disqualification in the state bred maiden race that put the Clement horse up, Waterville. So there were three, well, two disqualifications, one non-DQ, non-call, as is. But that Alba's Star got taken down and placed behind My Candy Girl, who did not go favored, by the way. That board, I was watching from the pool, I must admit. And the horse my horse ran terrible. Was mired early and never mounted any charge. 20-1. But I was shocked that all the money gravitated to Jazzy Lady, and she really didn't offer much. But My Candy Girl was undoubtedly bothered by Alba Star. And actually, I could have used My Candy Girl personally, because that would have been a backup ticket hit. But I could tell. Then all of a sudden, I realized that's the one horse that's coming. And I said, oh, my God, Seth's going to score out. And he did. So well done to Seth. He also, by the way, not only did he give you Unicorn Sally, John Kimmel, I think with what, his third win of the meet? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, third win of the meet for Kimmel. He also liked Serve the King in the John's call, and this one really hurt yesterday. Yesterday was a little frustrating for a couple of reasons. I loved the Ian Wilkes Rise the Guy with Saez, who you knew he was going to be forward in a race with no pace, and he was. He absolutely was, and it seemed like it was all happening, and in fact, he did not get bet. He was 6-1. Really, the whole scenario played out kind of like I was hoping, and then got beat. So that hurt a little bit. Rise the Guy. But part of a what a five win day for Chad. So Chad and you know, I know the other day he mentioned that he felt that. That he was going to finish strong. That he had a lot of bullets to fire, and yesterday was a big flare. So that was the big part of yesterday's interests and conversation, and it was really an unsatisfying. Yeah, you know, between the non-call and so forth, just a bit of a you know, one of those days that makes all of us as players, you know, just kind of, it's kind of deflating. There's the right word. But you go to sleep, you wake up, and you say, well, pretty good card today at Saratoga. Yeah, right? You just, it's one of those turn the page scenarios. Let me also, I think we're going to reach for Eric Zimny. I thought Keith might come down and open the show, but we'll get to Keith next hour, as well as Dick Powell. I'd be interested for Dick's thoughts on the steward situation, the stewarding situation. A quick hit at Indiana yesterday, those two stakes. And boy, speaking of good opinions, nice work by Bill Downs, who said that, you know, Bella Bowl was a free square, and she absolutely was for Marvin Johnson. And then came Bumble of Love, who, you know, Bill practically guaranteed. And Brian Michael. And owner Andrew Ritter with Marcelino Pedroza wins that Peony. And a little surprising that you got as close to 2-1 as you got. Paid 560. And then actually, you know, everything else kind of fell into place too. Those two horses that I was interested in, the 9 and the 10. Timeless Rose second, Beauty's Tale was third, so it wasn't a bonanza, but super paid $171, so that wasn't bad. And then leading the charge, congratulations to Robert Dobbs, who I saw that it was his first stake win. Deshaun Parker with leading the charge, a Sun Tracer gelding for Team Block. The Indiana bred, a 4-year-old, wins the Buchero. So, nice job. And went favored. There was a tough horse, Just Sweet Bell, for Scott Mullins. That was the tough horse in the sequence. You know, it was $200 pick five. And all you had to really do was come up with Just Sweet Bell in the sixth. So, That was the action at Indiana. And before we bring in Eric, let me mention, because I think it slipped through the cracks yesterday. I didn't give you Tuesday's stake results. At Philly, in the Smarty Jones, Folsom went down there. 3-5 was, you know, way too good. Florent Giroux, who's moving, who seems to be in a different venue every day, wins the Smarty Jones. Brad Cox and Judd Mon, of course. And we'll see. Interesting to see what you would think that Folsom will come back in the Pennsylvania Derby. Then you had Barron in the sprint, in the summer sprint for Butchie Reed. And St. Omer's Farm and Christopher Ferrick. And Lovely Ride won the Catherine Sophia in a bit of a thriller. And our friend Will Schwartz, leader of the band. And in fact, we'll give a big good morning to Will and to Johnny D, making their way to Saratoga right now in the car, heading north. And they were out, of course they were out. And in fact, apparently a big festive group out to Parks, out to Ben Salem yesterday. But it was Lovely Ride. Brett Calhoun and Allied, Chester Thomas, win the Catherine Sophia. So if you see Will and Johnny this weekend on the golf course and at, you know, out at Saratoga National and dining and bon vivanting, say hello. Let me bring in Eric Zimny. And Eric, I don't know how you did it. You kind of slipped. You slipped the Charlestown Classic card. I looked up and I said, "Oh my God, it's the Charlestown Classic tonight, tomorrow night." How you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you? Yeah, kind of snuck up on me too.
I'll tell you one thing. It didn't sneak up on the racing office because they did a tremendous job. This is a really nice card.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, our director of racing, Charlie McIntosh, and the staff down there, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they deserve all the credit for this one. Between the Oaks, the Classic, even the undercard races, that, you know, the 150,000s we have on there all came up super tough. And, you know, hopefully the bettors respond tomorrow night. But it's hard to imagine top to bottom the card turning out any better than it did. I mean, I really think top to bottom this is best card in our history, I believe. So, like I said, hopefully the bettors respond. Hopefully we'll see them throwing it in the pools tomorrow night.
Let's start with the Classic and the Grade 2 and 800,000. It always brings an eclectic crowd. And one thing that's notable about this race, it seems, once horsemen from other parts of the country make their trip to Charlestown, especially if they're successful, they then are always scouting for a horse to bring back.
Yeah, look, horsemen, just like anyone in the business, I mean, we're all kind of creatures of habit to a degree, right? Not having been here before and not, you know, shipping to somewhere not familiar, you may not, you know what to expect, you know, where do I ship in? You know, everything is new to folks. But you're right, when they run here, we do tend to get them back. I mean, you've got David Fox, who's run here a bunch. He's got Noble Drama in the Classic. Ian has certainly, you know, frequented our races over the years. He's been a great supporter. Sappy Joseph came for the first time last year. This Bill Mott's fourth starter here. He almost won the Classic with Ron the Greek. So I think there's only two or three trainers in the Classic who are going to be making their first start with the horse here. So you're right, a lot of repeat business. And it's helped make these races what they are. I mean, once you get these big names here and they keep coming back, it's, you know, the horses make these races and the riders make these races. And, you know, no different this year.
I gave everybody a snapshot of the field, and who's making the morning line for you?
That would be Paul Espinoza, our announcer.
Oh, sure, absolute. And Ball made Art Collector the favorite, and this was not an easy line to make, I wouldn't think, just because you, as noted, you've got horses coming from such a wide variety of recent starts, and you know, including some very high level starts, and you got the defending winner from last year, who took plenty of money, and Sleepy Eyes Todd, and it really since last fall he has not had the same kind of success and same kind of, I don't know, just he's not looked the same, Sleepy Eyes Todd, this year so far. But he comes back, and Dorai Eichelberry gets a chance on him. And as you mentioned, you know, the names that are included in here, Mott, of course, with the art collector now for Bruce Lunsford. The California Invaders, Between Rushy and Restrained Vengeance. David Fox comes back to town, noble drama. You know, Brad Cox has got a horse seemingly in every stake in the country. Uriah St. Louis, Informative, who, you know, on his best day is competitive here.
Yeah, I agree. When I kind of looked at the race the first time, I mean, it looks like there was a lot of speed in the, you know, a decent amount of speed in the race. I mean, I know Warrior's Charge kind of wasn't on the lead in the Foster, not really, you know, by choice necessarily. But, you know, you figure he'll show speed, you know, New York Traffic will probably show some speed. Sleepy Eyes Todd, you hit the nail on the head. Is this going to be the same horse that he was last year? You know, who knows? I do get a good laugh out of it. You know, he hasn't come within two lengths of winning a race this year. That was at Fawner, and the horses made almost $1.2 million in 2021, which, you know, that's is certainly a bit of an anomaly with those purses over in Saudi Arabia and Dubai that he was running for. But I think our collectors, you know, deserving favorite in there. I think Paul pegged the right morning line favorite. Luis Saez has ridden here before, has ridden pretty well here before. So you always worry about, you know, not just the horse but the rider, how they're going to take to the track. And that's one who I wouldn't have any concerns with. And if Bill Mott's sending a horse here on 3 weeks, you know, 3 weeks after his last start off a number like that, you know, who are you to question a guy with that kind of track record? So, you know, other than Air Token, you can probably make some kind of peripheral case for just about everybody in here.
You mentioned Saez, and that's a sidebar to this, because Tyler Gaffalione coming in as well from Saratoga. So they're going to wrap up the state bred card in New York. And let's see, the last what's the last post? 6:47. And, yeah, Saez has got a mount. And Tyler's last, actually, Gaffalione. Is Gaffalione coming early? Now that I'm looking at this, I don't see
him.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it. It looks like he's got a mount in the ninth, for sure. I didn't know if he had a mount in the pink ribbon. I do.
He's got one in the pink ribbon,
riding,
yeah.
He's riding Queen Nikki in the pink ribbon.
Yeah.
That's about 8:07. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm sure Saez is coming on a private plane from Albany to Martinsburg is where they fly in. They're probably 10 minutes from the track. But I would think Tyler, I don't know if he's coming a little bit early. That would be a tough stretch if he's riding until then up at Saratoga to make it for post for the eighth here on Friday night.
Yeah, his last his last call is... His last call at Saratoga is actually in the third.
Okay. Yeah, that
in
makes
fact,
sense.
I'll be surprised if he rides at all tomorrow at Saratoga, because he's got one in the fifth too. So okay. He's got a couple of mounts, and then it seems like he'll be there first, and then Saez will come in. Interesting. You know, that's an aggressive exercise to, you know, have a full day and you know, because it is a big day tomorrow with the, you know, with the New York showcase.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, you got that, then you're coming here, and then, oh, hey, guess what? It's Traverse Day. You got to flip around.
Yeah, got to go back.
For,
exactly.
You know, and get back for and ride those races, and, you know, great day for Luis Saez on Saturday up there, too. So, yeah, it's a lot of travel, but, you know, when you put up this kind of money, you know, these are hardworking guys, and they're the best at what they do for a reason. So, yeah, love having them, too. It's cool. I always say it. It's cool for our fans, you know, like they not getting to see these guys up close. You know, you got the leading rider at Saratoga who's going to be riding odds on choice in the Travers the next day, and to get to see him up close, you know, 18 hours before he rides at Central Quality. I mean, that's just so cool for our fans. And, you know, if the weather is nice tomorrow, we expect a big crowd. We've got some other stuff going on the apron, another track that we haven't had in past years with entertainment and some VIP tents and some beer gardens that we kind of tried to blow the event out this year. So it's going to be a huge day for us tomorrow. And like I said, I mean, the horses and the jockeys, they're the ones who our fans come out to see. But we're going to try to put on a good show for everybody, F&B-wise, and hope people in the area who are listening now can come on out.
Well, and for those, of course, that'll be watching throughout the country and anywhere else, lots of opportunities. And I've already made my case for Bourbon Calling, the Russell Road winner from last year, coming back, and 15-1, I'm all over that.
You have no shot now because I actually like that horse a little bit, too.
There we go.
Yeah, sorry, man.
We should mention that, you know, I didn't expect to latch on as much to the Oaks in when I was introducing the weekend racing to everybody this morning. And the Oaks came up very strong. This is a very, very good grade three.
Yeah, agreed, Steve. I mean, Caramel Swirl, look, other than the eight bells, she certainly looked like she could have been a star early on this year when she broke her maiden at Keeneland, doing it with ease, and then certainly her last start at Saratoga. I think the rail probably helps her a little bit on Friday night. That's another one who I'm pretty sure. I know she's 5-2 in the morning line. I know Pauline's Pearl will take some money. Inject will probably take some money. I think our Audio's Jersey is a little bit of a wild card in there, even though 12-1 in the morning line, probably going to get bet down from that. But I think Caramel Swirl is going to be, she's a deserving favorite in there just based off that last number alone that she ran up at Saratoga. And Junior Alva, I assume that's Junior's only mount on the card. I assume he's going to come down and ride as well. So. It's always good to have those Godolphin Silks here at Charlestown. It's happened a few times. It's cool to have them back. And I think Bill's actually supposed to be here too to saddle the horse. So she'll be a deserving favorite. Pauline's Pearl certainly, has got some back class there. Went in the Fantasy, ran in the Oaks, and I would keep an eye on that R Audio's Jersey too. She looks like she's got some speed. First start outside of Florida, but. Paco, I'm sure will ride her pretty aggressively, and she'll be lower than 12-1. I'd have to imagine.
She'll be half that. Rich Averill alone will make it half that.
Yeah, exactly.
This is an undefeated filly that I imagine only the only people that kind of follow the Gulfstream action closely kind of realized was. It continued to be undefeated, and then after the win on that Tampa, the Florida, I forget what they call that, the Florida card, after that win, went on the shelf, and I imagine that Georgina Baxter gets on this Adios Charlie filly herself, and coming off a 6-furlong. At Gulfstream for this, very, very much the horse, to catch at the least, and if just on that subject, if Cal Lynch's filly does not get into this race, not only is our Adios Jersey the one to catch, she's low in speed.
Yeah, look, I get what the horse people see maiden third. The horse was in for 35 last year, and the horse, is running primarily against State Bred Company, has run outside of Florida. I get all that, but look, I mean, if you go, I went back and watched the replay of the horse's last race, back in March. I mean, she's pretty fast, and I agree with you. I mean, look, you're going to get a little bit of a class test here because I don't think she's ever had, like, a Caramel Swirl or Pauline's Pearl kind of coming to her when she's turning for home or anything like that, and there's definitely going to be a little bit of an acid test there, but she is the one to catch, and unlike the Classic, you're right, there's not a ton of speed in here, but other than the one and the eight, those two, I could easily see those two just kind of merry-go-round and around the track.
Looking at the undercard beyond the two graded stakes and the Russell Road and this... what else? The Robert Hilton and the Pink Ribbon. Who else beside some of the invaders. Who locally? There's always some local horses, Eric, that deserve extra attention in these undercard races.
Yeah, we don't really have any, as far as like West Virginia breds, in necessarily in the unrestricted stakes, but you do have some horses who are very good in some of the undercard stakes. I know the fourth race, the race of Sadie Hawkins. There's a horse, Star Knight, in there who is 8 for 10 or life, never worse than seconds, won 6 in a row, hasn't really been headed in any of those. She's even money on the morning line. She's going to get bet. There's going to be a minus show pool in that race for sure. She's very, very good. You brought up the Russell Road. Someone asked me, like, how'd the card shape up for Friday night? And I said, well, we got a horse shipping from California who was 6-1 and the Bing Crosby shipping in for $150,000. So that's usually a pretty good sign that the undercard's going to be strong, too. So, we've got Shooter Shoot in there. We've got Vertical Threat in there. Wind of Change, who ran and almost beat Bourbon Calling in the Russell Road here last year. That race is going to be great. So you've got all the 150,000 race came up strong, and that's kind of what made the card what it was, top to bottom. But there's also a bunch of West Virginia bred stakes, too, so you're going to get to see the best of the locals kind of on display about a month and a half before they have the West Virginia Breeders' Classics here. So, big night, 13 races. Got a couple great wagering opportunities for people, too, with some guaranteed pools and guaranteed payout of our Pick 6 jackpot. So, looking for a big night at the Windows.
What you mentioned the jackpot. I was going to ask you about this. In fact, the way your menu unfolds, there's just the Pick 5 that starts in race 3. And when I was looking this morning and putting this together, I was a little surprised that there wasn't a Pick 5 ending with the Classic. What's the jackpot situation for lay out the conditions of that?
Yeah, it's because Murphy's Law always has the plan. The thing got hit last week. We were trended towards probably about a $75,000 to $90,000 carryover. Hopefully with the card tonight we can get it to about $10,000. But at the end of the day, the takeout, even on the Knights of the Mandatory, it's only 12%. So you're getting a pretty low vig to play into that pool. And the Pick 5, we don't have a Pick 5 that ends with the Classic, but it is the last 5 races on the card. So that's another $100,000 guarantee, and that's only a 15% takeout. So like to get some money back into the hands of the bettors. And maybe we'll get $100,000 to $150,000 in the Pick 6. It's probably not going to be a... Like in the past, we've had 150, 200 in the carryover, and we've gotten close to $1 million in there. Those $100,000 guarantees with the full fields, we'll probably hit those, Gary. If I knew the fields were this good, we probably would have sweetened the guarantee a little bit, to be honest. But, we're going with what we got. And 5.72, that's the record handle for here that we set 2 years ago, and hopefully we can top that.
Well, 5 o'clock Eastern start for the 13 race card, and a great way to lead into the last Saturday of August and Travers Day. How's everything? We haven't talked actually since last year's lead in, and in terms of things down there overall. How's business and how's the season gone?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, Steve. I mean, the business volume itself has been promising. We've kind of kept up the momentum from last year, certainly not at the same level as when we had that, May, June period last year when us and, the Fawners of the world and some of the other small tracks were really the only games in town and we were doing numbers that we hadn't seen before. But much like a lot of other places, the struggle for us is just getting folks, working and having staffing levels where we want to have them. Not as much even on the racing side as the hospitality side. It's a tough go, and tomorrow night, you've got all these people, and it's harder to service them all than it's been in the past. I mean, we have folks in our human resources department bussing tables tomorrow night in the dining room. It's that kind of day. So definitely challenging. Hopefully we come out of this soon, but I can't complain about the business volumes that we've been producing. It's definitely been solid.
It's funny. I'm glad you touched on it because it's a challenge. We saw it at Del Mar. They were hesitant to open the infield and to basically have GA attendance just because they just did not feel, you know, that they were staffed up to the point where they could service a crowd of 40,000 and 35,000.
Yeah, and people think, oh, you're trying to save money. That's not it at all. Like, we would desperately love to have more people here working the event. You're right; it's the opposite of it. And it doesn't shock me to hear that Del Mar has a similar issue. I think a lot of tracks. My guess would be that they're going through the same thing. Not just tracks, but business too. On the gaming side here, it's sort of the same thing. But it's going to be all hands on deck tomorrow night, that's for sure. I'm sure we'll all be playing several roles and wearing many hats.
Well, so for those of you that are heading to Charlestown, if you see Eric behind the bar, give him a big tip and say thank you. Eric, great to connect. Good luck to everybody tomorrow. An absolutely dynamite, terrific Charlestown Classic card. Starting at 5 o'clock, feature at 10:18, the Charlestown Oaks at 9:45. So everybody's Friday night plans. And if you're here at Vegas, I imagine the NHC crowd, they're going to be handicapping and getting ready for day two. So they'll probably be watching along and betting. So it should be a terrific evening, and I hope you knock them dead.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you for all your support over the years, too. Definitely appreciate it.
My pleasure. Eric Zimney, everybody, and Charlestown, Chucktown. You can follow Eric, and Eric has that unique spelling of Eric, E-R-I-C-H, Zimney. Follow Eric. Probably we'll see him at Breeders' Cup, and then probably again at Symposium as well. Eric does a great job. Dick Powell is, I think, next, and I just heard a dial tone, so maybe we lost Dick, or are you there, Dick?
I'm here, Steve.
Okay, it was must have been a different one, that
different dial tone.
Different dial tone. Good morning, Dick.
You better get the voice straightened out, man. It's only Thursday morning.
Every single time we come here, it's just unbelievable. And there was one year. What was it? Was it 2 years ago? I'll ask Pete. I was sick. I mean, I don't know. It just plowed through it. But this is just, I feel fine. But I could tell yesterday, I said to Tina, I said, my voice is, late in the show yesterday, I was like, I'm getting that stupid, you know, Vegas throat. I don't know. I don't know if it's because the rooms are, they're in the hotel room and the room is dry. I don't know what. So I don't know what to.
Yeah, plus the plane dehydrates you. The room dehydrates you. You're in a, I don't know what you want to call it. That's 110, 105 degrees outside. So.
But it's a dry heat.
Yeah, that always helps. I love that.
Johnny, in fact, I talked to Johnny D yesterday. Johnny said there used to be a comic out. He said either Vegas or somewhere. He said it's a dry heat, but he said, like my oven.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Dick, before we do any handicapping or talk Travers Day and talk the white filly in Japan too, unbelievable. It's amazing. I hadn't mentioned her. I was saving it for you. But the steward situation. What is to be done? Because this can't go on.
Not only do I agree, it should be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And the empty suits that run racing keep telling us what bothers us the most, without really knowing what bothers us the most. And when you see the inconsistency, yes, you can take an individual race and say, how should this have been called? And maybe it's 60-40, something like that. Then you take another race. But race to race, not only can you not predict the actual outcome, what should happen, you can't predict what's going to happen.
Right.
In other words, you're trying to handicap the should this horse come down, and more importantly, are they going to take him down? So I was doing all sorts of stuff yesterday, but I did see the last race where they did take down the 12, and to me, rightfully so. But that eighth race, that's just and the crazy part with the eighth race is there was no reason to do what he did. He had all the room in the world. He set the trip. He saved ground. He had plenty of room to tip out and go around the leaders, and he lost control of his horse, whatever, and wiped out the horse next to him. That's a foul. I don't care if the horse next to him had a chance of winning or anything. So, number one, I still vehemently disagree with this trend, or whatever you want to call it, movement, to change the DQ rules and go to a, quote, international standard. No, I think that creates more problems. And number two, I think if you add in the fact of did it affect the outcome of the race, you've now really increased the odds of getting it wrong. I've been invited to speak before stewards at the University of Louisville where they have to go get accredited. I'd have to say it didn't go well because if they had a gun, they probably would have shot me on sight because I had a lot of things to say. And we worked through them. But I give an example. Do you remember the Florida Derby? And it might have been Upstart. And I remember Todd won the race with Materiality. Last race of the day, 7 o'clock. It's getting dark. Rick Violet's horse. Looks like he gets bumped in the stretch. No replay because they took 10-15 minutes to do the trophy presentation, and by then the day is over, and we never got to see the replay. So I made a point of that. And apparently, I think it was Jose, wanted to file a claim, and it never got called in by the outrider who has the microphone. A lot of things went wrong, but visually, it was a horror show. So one of the stewards, and apparently he was a Florida steward, he says to me, well, are you saying that we made the race official to get out of there? And I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. But that's how it looked. And I said, optics matter, and if you're going to do things like that, how else are we going to what conclusion are we going to draw? So now you got Saratoga. Now historically, Saratoga, you might call them a little tighter in the first week. It's a different configuration. The turf races, you've gone from like one turn, one and a half turns, to now two turns. Turf sprints are pretty tight. You know, a lot of things can go wrong. Riders might be a little more aggressive up here. Big purses, so usually there might be some sacrificial lamb who gets a suspension early in the meet because the stewards are showing them who's in charge. Well, haven't seen that, and I don't have an answer, Steve, because I don't know how you can get people to judge things on a consistent basis when some of these things are not easily judged. And I'll be the first to admit that and grant that, and some of them are 50-50, 55-45 type calls and things like that. But it's just when there's an obvious one, like race eight, How do you not take that horse
down? Now, and this is, this is a growing frustration. And it's funny that I'll phrase this. I guess it's a qualified thought. There's. There's elements of the social media quotient that enter into this. And, there's plenty of things you see people frustrated with and complaining about that are really not the not fair criticisms in a lot of cases. But you understand the way they're voiced out of frustration. Then there's the valuable part of complaining or you know, lashing out. And when it comes to these discussions and to these incidents, it has really raised the awareness level about inconsistency, and not just inconsistency is one thing, and uniformity, lack of uniformity. I mean, it's really a parallel track, obviously, and that's what's really been brought into focus with the with the number of questionable calls and questionable non-calls, and when there's a spotlight being shown on them to the degree that they are now, it's an alarm bell. And as you said, it doesn't seem like there's any eagerness or any even attempt to address this. And I suppose that it would come from where, Dick? Rope would be the RCI. I mean, who can take the lead on this topic?
It's up to the individual tracks and individual racing commissions to appoint qualified people. I'll give you an example. And this is, believe me, when I say things like this, I do not endear myself to people or make any friends. But the Jockey Club hired Dr. Hill as a steward. Now, Dr. Hill was track vet. He was at the starting gate for literally every race. Race starts, gets in the car, follows the field, gets back to the finish line. That's the job. Now, to me, if you're not watching races, if you're not watching races live and in person through binoculars or on TV monitors, I'm sorry. You need years and years and years and years of experience of doing that. And we know that trainers usually watch only their races. Many people only watch their horse in their race. So they're not watching 10 races a day and looking at all the races and all the horses in the races and things like that. So we've seen people become stewards that you just question, well, what job did they have that would lead them to be a steward? Now, there's more to the job than adjudicating races, which, I get that. But that's another conversation where, we have major owners in the sport not paying their bills, and stewards should have been involved in that from day one before the money got humongous, six figures, seven figures. And the stewards there didn't do their job. Where in other countries, you wouldn't dream of doing that. The stewards wouldn't take your entry. If you're not paying your bills, and it's been proven and stuff like that. So there's different parts of the job, but the race-watching part is, to me, critical as a better. And I've seen people appointed stewards for political reasons, for just good old boy type reasons that are not necessarily race watchers. And yet they're put into this position. Yeah, do I know a lot about football? Do I watch football? Do I pay attention to football? Yeah, but you're going to put me on the field and, stand behind the middle linebacker and be an umpire? I don't think so. So training, talent pool, promoting people from circuits that might have done a good job and make it to the major league, so to speak. Yeah, those are how most sports get adjudicated. I'll give you another quick example, Steve. The NBA, if you watch the NBA now, with one or two exceptions, you don't recognize any of the referees. Where years ago, you had Mindy Rudolph and Richie Powers. I mean, you knew all the referees. And then slowly, subtly, the NBA got rid of almost all the referees. They're younger. There's many females. They do their job. They're well-trained. And it's not even a factor. I mean, I watch NBA every day. It's on. And refereeing is not an issue. So they took the bull by the horns. They got rid of what was there. And they brought in people that were highly trained and highly skilled at doing it, because they had the referee G League and things like that, not college, but professional basketball, before they got their shot. And then when they got their shot, there's a very strict oversight of what they do. Same thing in baseball. That little square around home plate, as annoying as it might be to have on TV, every umpire gets rated on every pitch in every game when you're behind home plate. So you want to call it right, because that's going to affect, you know, how what your rating is and what your ability to do the job is. But once someone becomes a steward, what's the process? It's one thing, like you had mentioned, calling in riders the next day. Well, who judges the judges?
Exactly, and then you hear that in every sport, actually, and in fact, what you know, in this particular case, one of the things that, to get back to the consistency element, you know, they had taken that horse down in the maiden race, based on that decision, then why is this horse left up? That's the part of this that, you know, especially in proximity, you know, if you go weeks without any hard decisions, and then there's one isolated one, as you mentioned, you know, 40-60, 55-45, okay. But not within, you know, not within two races of each other. That was the sixth. That race was the sixth when Waterville got put up, I think, right? Yeah, it was the sixth that Saratoga Chrome got taken down. I mean,
as a conspiratorial horse player who's, unfortunately, has a mount that gets him in trouble. Remember a couple of years ago, Richie was representing Chris Landeros.
Yeah.
And Chris got taken down, and just a foul that just didn't even exist. It wasn't even a judgment call. It was just total BS. Who was the owner? Whose Silks was he running in? Whose Silks was went to pool running in yesterday that got left up? You can't tell me that's not a factor. You're Peter Brandt. You run a lot of horses. You're in the game. You're big. You know, you're prevalent. When we watch races, that's what we talk about. Who was it? Not necessarily what happened. A lot of times it's who was it. Now, I don't want you to comment on that. I'll go out and I'll take the bullets for that one. But it's once again, that's how it looked. That's what I tried to tell the steward. That's how it looked.
Yeah, and I'm not. It's funny when you say that. There's really two incidents on that front that pop in my head, and I want to say it was Chris Pash on the West Coast, and he had, I'm trying to remember the nice stakes filly that was involved in this, and he had, I want to say it was a race down the hill, and his filly or mare was flying, and it's one of those. In fact, there's two of these incidents that now that I'm sort of free, you know, free associating. And it was one of those brush by, you know, a horse is flying on the outside. And we just discussed this the other day, actually, last week, right? Their tendency is to then, you know, lean in and lug in to the rail. That's their tendency. And as you know, this oncoming winner is, you know, blowing by everybody, brushes a horse to her inside, and next thing you know, they take her down, and it was just preposterous. I'll have to figure out which one this was. And I had Chris Pasch on the air, and I mean, he was beside himself. And one of the reasons he was, and again, you know me, I'm dismissive of the conspiratorial concept as well. He said, going to the parking lot, he saw one of the stewards, and the guy said, "I remember you from some backstretch incident when Chris said that he had gotten into a fight when he was, you know, in his 20s on the backstretch, and had been, you know, brought in front of the stewards." So when you hear a comment like that, it lends itself to that. And you know, the other incident that fits this profile is the Smart and Pretty DQ in the Black Eyed Susan, when Norberto Arroyo did the same kind of thing, brushing by a horse that was finished. Smart and Pretty wins by a dozen lengths, and they take Arroyo down, and it absolutely felt, they put Ramon up, and it felt like if it was the other way around, if Ramon had been on the winner and Arroyo had been on the horse that got brushed, they would have left it alone. These are you know, real things that happen. We're not creating them out of the ether.
Yeah, well, or Bayern in the Breeders' Cup Classic. If that's not Bob Baffert, he's not only coming down, he's placed last. I mean, I'm sitting watching. I was at Santa Anita that day. I was with a bunch of international people, and they were like looking at it. And, oh, horse has to be disqualified, even under their rules. Horse has to be disqualified. I said, don't be so sure. Don't be so sure. Leave them up. Good night, everybody. tip your bartenders on the way out. Have a nice day. See you tomorrow. And the problem is, we will be back tomorrow.
Well,
if we would be, you know, more actions than words, and say, you know what, I'm going to do this for a week, a month, or whatever, but we'll be back tomorrow. Oh, that's, you know, yes. But this is what people talk about. This is what horse players talk about. Not the 1863 club, not the box area, stuff like that. This is what horse players talk about.
Yep. No, 100%. And it, you know, it's a war of attrition, frankly. In terms of wearing people down, and you know, whether it's just how hard it is to win, Dick, in general, right? I mean, that's a reality. Yeah. It's hard to win.
Game's tough enough.
Yes, exactly, and. You know, we're in a position. I mean, there's structural issues that are challenges, and maybe it's just because there's so many things that always are in play. I mean, you know, we've got We've got a lot of racetracks. We've got a lot of races. And there's a lot of moving parts. It's hard to, you know, assuage or keep people up to, you know, up to date with progress. I mean, one of the things that I that does bother me is when I see, you know, certain theme. Oh no, you know that nobody cares and nobody's doing anything. Well, that's not true. That's not true. And all you got to do is look to what Naira has tried to do for the players with limiting access of the groups to their, you know, to certain pools and limiting their involvement. And it this summer at Saratoga, it's come into focus, essentially shutting them off, you know, to the wind pool. And, you know, you saw the piece the other day by Hegarty where essentially they've taken their ball and gone elsewhere because they were instructed that they were going to be shut off with 3 minutes to post. So they said, well, we're not betting here then. Okay, goodbye. And the late odds changes, the late odds drops have really been, you know, much less a part of the, you know, the lead up and even after the bell at Saratoga. So I mean, then you talk about the, you know, the $1 pick six and the pick five, the cross country, you know, the keeping them out of those pools. And it's to the player's benefit. I don't, the liquidity discussion to me is, you know, it's not a defense of, you know, having the groups in the pools. So there are attempts being made to ameliorate situations. But there's a lot of them, and so, you know, the negativity pervades the discussions.
It's always been that way. I remember at Aqueduct, you would go down the escalator, and for some reason, there would be like a light at the end of the escalator, and it was too low, so it was easily reachable if you rolled up your racing form. You could swat it and break the light bulb. Well, it happened not every day, but every other day, you know. Nine races a day, it's a negative-sum game. People might be leaving the track that aren't too happy for any number of reasons, and boom, break the light to where, obviously, they finally made the light higher where it couldn't be reached. So, yeah, you got a lot of things that are against you. You know, the gods, number one, the racing gods, they're not always friendly. And so any negative sum game, you're gonna have that. But when it just feels like piling on, when you just feel like stewards aren't even looking at the same race that we're looking at. Now yesterday, yeah, someone benefited from that, you know, and maybe more people benefited from leaving the horse up than taking the horse down. But you have safety issues, and you got so many issues. You also have a sporting event that's supposed to be contested under certain rules to see who the winner is. And if I'm going to break the rules to win, well, that's another philosophical discussion.
All right, let's shift gears, Dick, and. Don't know how much. I know you'll have your analysis for the weekend and for Travers Day at Brisnet, but some thoughts about the card Saturday.
I've already finished. I filed thanks to David Aragona getting the morning line out last night. David does a phenomenal job with doing it and doing it in a timely manner. So So the 13 races morning line came out like 9 o'clock last night. So I was able to plug all that information in. Once I have that, I'm able to put my suggested wagers into the analysis. Yeah, there are some favorites tomorrow, and you don't want to go with all the favorites, but you don't want to try to beat every one of them. The vulnerable favorite I see on the card is Jackie's Warrior. And the reason I say that is when you win a race so easily, there's just a seduction that takes place that you think it's going to be like that every time. And yes, he's fast, and yes, he's talented and everything else, but it was a sloppy track. He dominated. He won for fun. And horses that win for fun don't always come back and win for fun. So I think he's a little vulnerable at even money. Stafford has a few in here that look pretty tough. The real betting is going to be in the last race, the first couple, which have the bigger fields. There's a very interesting pick four in race four. So pay attention to the betting menu Saturday, with a 13-race card. There's some different bets. And there's a pick four that begins in race four, and it ends with Gamine, but it has some decent races leading up to that. So that's interesting that you could possibly work around that, or if you think it means vulnerable, then yeah, it's really good pick four. So I thought the four go was very, very balanced. These are horses that tend to have a habit of beating each other up, so it's not the type of race where someone who won is going to come back and win again. Usually that's not the case. The Sword Dancer, kind of similar. I mean, Tribber Haven, I liked him in the Manhattan. He came back and won at Monmouth. He's going to be tough going three turns. I'm going to try to beat him. But I do like speed going three turns, especially on the inner turf. And the turf should be firm. There's a slight chance of showers for Saturday. So it's just manage your money, get started early. As we see every day, just that Louis Saez is in the double, and you're off to a great start.
You're right.
And, just not all these favorites are going to win, so don't get turned off by seeing an odds-on favorite, especially in the third races. If they win, they win. You still can work around them. And here's something, Steve. Most people just don't seem to understand. You can pass the race. There's no one off to the side with a gun to your head making you bet a race you don't want to bet. So if you want to bet a race, go get a pizza, go do something, whatever. By all means, do it. It's a 13-race card. You got plenty of races to bet on. But it's with the weather cooperating, I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, the Travers impression yesterday, Seth and I, immediately after the draw, we kind of... You looked at the way things lined up, and it does. It feels like Essential Quality is able to break clean and watch to see if there's going to be, you know, a little bit of a pace tussle in front of them, with, like, I imagine Mask Parade and Midnight Bourbon's got to go right from the inside.
Yeah, and Santana's pretty aggressive. I know there's a school of thought that Essential Quality doesn't like being down on the inside. He drew post two, but it's a mile and a quarter race. Louis is going to have plenty of time to save ground and then get him clear when he needs to get him clear, especially with only six rivals. So I don't see that as being a factor. I'm old school. I like a race over the track, so I do like the horses coming out of the Jim Dandy in the places underneath Essential Quality. But he's it's not that far-fetched to have this horse as undefeated in his entire career. You know, his Kentucky Derby, there's nothing wrong with his Kentucky Derby other than a nightmare trip. And he's done everything else right. He's like Malathat. He doesn't he doesn't have that dynamic burst, but still, you look up, like, I think it was Richie Migliori who compared Normal at that, I think, in that case, to Buck Passer. Buck Passer's an all-time great, but he didn't win by more than a half length. He just loped along and waited on horses and things like that. Essential Quality just wins, and Brad's done a phenomenal job with them. I like, he's only had two workouts coming in, and they're both pretty solid. But what you don't want to see from the Jim Dandy to the Travers is a catch-up workout. If you came out of the Jim Dandy in great shape, you should just have easy works, nothing fast. Heading into the Travers, you want your energy. You shouldn't be trying to work too hard coming in. And Essential Quality, just he could get beat, but he looks awfully tough.
Dick Powell, everybody, and Dick's analysis, his full card analysis at Brisnet. Dick, Eddie, you got to play for today while we're together.
You know, I don't, because I spent with 13 races for Saturday.
Oh, you worked on, yeah, you worked on the car.
That was all my focus. I'll look at Thursday in a couple of minutes, but no, unfortunately.
That's all right. I'm going to be late.
I know. Usually I've tried to do that, and then with this, I was rolling along, getting it done. So no, I do not have a play for today.
Any thoughts for the last quarter of the meet overall? And obviously, Chad flexed some depth muscles yesterday with the five wins.
Yeah, I mean, just no surprise with Chad, and not just Chad winning because of numbers. It's Chad winning because he's great at spotting his horses. He's great at resting his horses. When Chad's in that 45 to 60 day layoff zone, he's unbelievable, you know. So therefore, in this kind of meet, if a horse gets beat the first week, now's when they might be coming back the sixth or seventh week to run a big race, and we saw some of that yesterday. But no, Chad's will probably just dominate the rest of the meet. And as I said from day one, Louis's the man. I just wish we had proposition wagering, because you probably could have got at least 4-1 on Louis to be the leading rider before the meet began.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Irad and Jose would have been favored. Depending on how much favored they were, Louis could have been minimum 4-1, possibly higher. And he hasn't clinched it yet, but he has a pretty good lead if he can, you know, just knock wood, stay healthy, and make it to the end of the meet. But he's just, you watch, I watch Louis race, and if I was an owner, I'd be on the phone with my trainer and saying, now, why do we ride this guy every day? I think he's that good. And does he have a single winner for Chad?
And I would say, I would guess no. Although I can tell you, let's see, I've got. I'm going to say no.
My gut feeling is no.
Yeah.
Because if he rode for Chad, it would kind of stick out. But here's a guy dominating the rider standings and not having any business with the leading trainer. Now, yes, he has business with Mike Maker. So he's had a big meet for Mike Maker, who's the second leading trainer. But that's kind of Ramon Dominguez. Like, when Ramon came to New York, he didn't have a go-to trainer. And Ramon just won for everybody. And Louis the same way. He wins for everybody. He wins dirt, turf, long, short. Doesn't matter.
Well, and clearly one of the emergent elements of Saez is Kieran McLaughlin and his relationship with Todd.
Yes.
I don't know if Todd's letting him win at the poker table, if there's some of that going on. No, big time tie-in with Kieran and Todd. That's readily apparent.
Yes. yes, that's been a big help, and that's gotten him, you know, good mounts. But then, you know, he's had essential quality since last year for Brad, and just, you know, he just rides everything. And it's gotten to the point where I can watch a 10-horse field, and I can pick Louis out of the pack.
Oh, yeah. No, he's distinct. I brought this up the other day with, you know, my first awareness was via David Fox, and, you know, that he was just ticketed. And I've explained for years and suggested his ability, particularly on the front end, going long, getting a horse on a lead, getting him to relax on the backstretch, and then he spurts away into the turn, and everybody starts to panic. Then he basically idles through the turn, and then he spurts again, and it's a thing of beauty, especially if you're betting, or in our case, he rode three winners for us like that, and he's just got a terrific touch. I'm delighted to see him the success he's having. And I'm as we're talking, I'm going through and clicking off everybody that he has ridden for at this meet and won for. And he's riding Rudy's winners for one. You already mentioned Maker. Brittany Russell has tabbed him for her wins up here. And Danny Gargan's wins have come with Saez as well. And Joe Sharp's as well. Dominic Schettino as well. And John Kimmel. He's had Kimmel's winners. Bruce Brown. George Weaver. Cherie DeVoe. George Abreu, Brian Lynch, and I think that's the Falcone, Mott, Art Collector, which has gotten him a chance to go to Charlestown. There you go. There's your lineup of Jeffrey Englehart, Eddie Barker, Jimmy Bond. How about that for a variety?
Yeah, when I get a chance, I got to listen to Kieran. He was on that TDN writers' room this week, and when I get a chance, I want to listen to that. And I'm a big Kieran fan, and I'm thrilled for Kieran that he, you know, left training. And Kieran had been a jockey agent. When Kieran was a trainer, he read the condition book as well as any jockey agent. And now, with a terrific rider like Louis, they've just been perfect match.
Well, Dick, this was great. I appreciate the frank comments on the stewarding situation. Best of luck this week. We'll do some recapping, and we'll be...
We'll be ready to go for Shot 10 next week.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Be good.
I appreciate it. Dick Powell, everybody, and takes us a little past the bottom of the hour. And a couple of things. We're going to talk to Keith Shamblin and Tony Black and more. But Woodbine, Toronto, dealing with the heat. They've canceled. They've canceled today. So, we've already... there's always going to be something, right? There's got to be something that that throws you into a bit of a tizzy, and that's going to make for some adjustment. We'll find out from Keith in a minute about what the First Chance, Next Chance contest is going to adjust, and what track they'll have to substitute in here, because it was going to be Saratoga, Woodbine, and Del Mar. So they're making that decision. We'll find out in a little bit. Let's take probably our only break of the morning back to Vegas and NHC coverage on the horizon. Starting to get some players down here to pick out their table. And we'll talk to either Tony next or Keith if he's ready for us. Back after this.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Tickets for the Run Happy Travers are on sale now for just $15. Don't miss Saratoga's biggest day of the season. The Run Happy Travers, Saturday, August 28th. Save $5 when you buy your tickets in advance at NYRA.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents...